Welcome to the Balance Bites podcast with Diane Sanfilippo and Liz Wolf. Diane is a New York Times bestselling author of Practical Paleo, the 21-Day Sugar Detox, and co-author of Mediterranean Paleo Cooking. Liz is the best-selling author of Eat the Yolks and the Skintervention Guide. Together, Diane and Liz answer your questions, interview leading health and wellness experts, and share their take on modern paleo living with their signature-friendly and balanced approach. Remember our disclaimer, the materials and content within this podcast are intended as general information only and are not to be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
Hi friends, welcome to the Balanced Bites podcast. Let's get a quick word in from our first episode sponsor.
Support for this podcast is provided by Dragonfly Traditions, natural, nourishing skincare with absolutely no unnecessary chemicals. It's natural nutrition for the skin. I am a huge fan of Dragonfly, from their serum to their night cream and everything else the owner Phoebe has created. Your skin will be soft and happy with Dragonfly Traditions. If you head over to dragonflytraditions.com and make a purchase of one or more of their skincare products, you can then add Balanced Bites to your shopping cart for one penny. Phoebe will then not only send you two free lip balms with your order, she'll also send you that penny back. Remember, that's two free lip balms with purchase from Dragonfly Traditions.
All right, folks, Liz here with Diane as usual, and we're banging out my last few episodes of the Balanced Bites podcast before I go on leave.
That's supposed to be a pun.
Yeah, it was. I also, later on, I had put in the introduction like a copulating reference, and I took it out. But I'm glad you got that. But I'm coming back. So last few episodes before I go on leave, and then I go on leave, and then I come back. So I'm not gone forever, and I'll pop in. Enjoy my voice, though, for now. Savor it while you can, because while I will be contributing my fertility tips with Meg to the podcast while I'm gone, I will not be assaulting you with weekly wisdom for a little while. We're going to pre-record the tips. So are you sad, Diane?
I am. Are you weepy? Sobbing. I have a whole box of tissues, and I've already used half of them just for the last 30 seconds while you were talking.
You poor thing. I hope they're the soft kind.
I shall miss you, but I will do my best to find a guest co-host for some episodes and a bunch of guests. I know we have a handful of guests already planned coming up, so I'm excited about that. I like interviewing people. It's fun.
I mean, I feel like it's
good times.
It probably sounds a little strange to talk about leave already, since I literally, here you go. Here's my little joke. Since I just copped to having copulated, since I did just cop to being in the family way like 2 weeks ago. But no, I don't.
How many other ways can we say pregnant that are not pregnant? In the family way.
In the family way. Do you like that? I actually got that from thesaurus.com.
OMG.
Maybe they'll sponsor us. But it's getting close to that time. I did not come clean until a little bit, you know, later than most people do. But so, yeah, I am going on leave ahead of and after my estimated due date. So still that. Yeah. So that'll just give me some time to get ready and really be present for what's about to happen, which I is apparently a big deal. So I've been told.
It's a minor responsibility.
Apparently so. Apparently so. So anyway, that's what's new with me. What's new with you?
Well, what else is new with you? You sound a little stuffy over there.
I am. I forgot to turn on my humidifier last night, and it is insanely dry around here. Insanely dry.
We should talk about that. I don't know when.
What, that you should sleep with your face in a humidifier?
Yeah. All right. We'll just talk about it right now.
It's everything. It's skin. It's your mucous membranes. It's everything. Humidifiers during the winter are just a must.
Totally important. We, since we got back from our trip to South America, literally the next day, my throat had that little scratch in it, which for me is the first sign that I need to take care of something to just get my immunity boosted. And we turned on the humidifier. I popped some oregano capsules and fine, totally fine. Like nothing ended up kind of creeping into my system there. And I shared, I think it was, well, by the time this airs, shared a little while ago on social media again, the post that I have on my blog about natural cold care tips and prevention and all that. And I have a video on it. But the one thing I didn't add to it was a humidifier, because I made that video quite some time ago. And the humidifier is definitely like probably my, I would say, top two things right now between the oregano and the humidifier. They're battling it out.
I'm saying, man, it's just, yeah. I think it's getting worse. It must be concomitant with global warming or something, global drying.
The skin on my legs will agree with you there.
Ew.
It's so scaly and dry. But yeah, the humidifier has been awesome every night. It's awesome for everyone except the dog, because she basically equates it to something scary.
It's like so, Kevin with his furnace in the basement.
Yes,
Kevin
McAllister. Exactly. Yeah, she like cowers, and as soon as we start filling it, she knows that something's going on. And then as soon as I plug it in, and I have a humidifier from probably like 1978, probably from the year I was born. I mean, it is legit old school. Don't put your hand in front of it. You'll burn yourself, like from the times before.
That's how we used to teach kids to be careful around appliances.
Yeah, before things were all so protected that you couldn't get hurt. It's like, don't touch the thing. It's going to burn you. But yeah, love the humidifier.
You know, I've been getting questions lately from people who, and I'm going to do a Skincare Saturday post at purelyprimalskincare.com at the blog about this. People have been asking me the difference between skin that is oil dry and skin that is water dry. So maybe I'll just throw that in here. Obviously, I tell everybody who's concerned about skincare to use a humidifier, but if your skin is still dry consistently, it might not be so much that it's water dry and that your environment's sapping water from your skin. It might be more that it's oil dry, that you actually need some more nourishing oils for your skin because it's maybe your skin's not producing enough or something like that. We are supposed to have some sebum to make our skin nice and plump.
I think the real solution for me would be to go back to South America, because probably my skin was definitely not dry there.
I'm pretty sure nobody is supposed to live in North Jersey in the winter.
It's the worst. And this past weekend, it was so icy that, I mean, there were so many folks who were slipping and falling. Actually, Scott slipped and fell. So yeah, it's pretty gnarly. And I question why anybody lives here. Yeah, he did. He went to see one of our friends.
Good.
Yeah. So I digress. What else is going on with me? I just wanted to quickly mention that this spring I'll be doing a handful of events. I don't have specific dates and times as of just yet, but I'll probably be popping in on the last leg of the tour with my friends, our friends, Bill and Haley. I think they're going to be hitting Washington, D.C., Charlotte, North Carolina, and Orlando sometime mid-March. So I'll probably be with them, and I'm looking at a couple of other spots, possibly Vegas and possibly Phoenix, because as we're talking, I would like to go somewhere warm. So keep your eyes and ears open for all that good stuff. And then late April, right before my birthday, I will be at Paleo FX. And this year I'm actually speaking about business related stuff. So for those of you who've been following the podcast for 3+ years, you know, I've been talking about this stuff for longer than that. And, you know, I've just got a lot of things I'm interested in teaching people and want to support people with. And that is one of them. So I'm pretty excited about that little workshop. But I just want to mention to our new listeners, if you've only been listening for the last few weeks or few months, we have 170 something episodes in the archive. And I would say 95 to 99% of everything we've ever said on them would still hold true today. So even if there's something that we may have talked about on one of the very first episodes, I doubt either of us, we really don't tend to overstate things or get too alarmist about anything.
You mean you don't tend to exaggerate ever? No one in my family overreacts.
To anything.
No.
But I think I just want to remind people they can go back and listen to those, because I think we have a lot of new listeners who, you know, they're asking questions and I'm like, well, we've definitely covered that a bunch of times. We're happy to cover them again, because I think you and I also both have certain things that we have new perspectives on. So we like to share that. But just want to encourage anybody who's listening, who's newer to the show, to just go back and listen, maybe, you know, to a new one and then an old one, and kind of alternate that way. So you stay up to date on what's going on currently, but then kind of get all that background information and education.
Lovely. I agree. I was checking Instagram while you said that.
Thank you.
I got tagged on a picture of a book that was not my book.
Awesome.
That's okay, though. At least people are thinking of me when they're reading. That's really important. Reading is important.
On Facebook, like years ago, and, you know, Facebook was new and you could still see everything, people just always used to tag me in pictures of bacon, literally pictures of like, food. I was like, okay.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it was so crazy.
Back when Facebook was, what, we were like 15, no, 18. When did I get on Facebook? I think I was 20 or 21, maybe, for the first time. They had photo albums, before you had a timeline, you literally had to go out and attempt to stalk somebody. You had to go to their page intentionally to stalk them. And rarely could you then find them on other social media because it was like Facebook or MySpace. What am I bringing this child into? What kind of world is this?
I don't even know.
All right, moving on to our shout out this week. This is for Jen Sinkler of Thrive is the Fittest. I know you've worked with Jen on at least one project in the past, and we love Jen. She is a former rugby player, now weightlifter, empowering social media. I mean, she pretty much does everything, but she's basically a badass. But she recently provided some words of wisdom for women who lift or want to lift on the Factor 75 blog. And I wanted to read a few quotes from the article. She was featured along with a few other strong women, but we'll just focus on what Jen had to say here. A few quotes from the article, which was entitled Real Life Advice from Women Who Lift. First quote, presenting as feminine as society defines it or not, has no bearing whatsoever on the amount of weight you can lift. All that matters is, can I lift it or not? And next quote, strength is contagious. It has a habit of bleeding into every other aspect of your life, and the empowerment you feel after completing a big feat in the gym is easily carried out beyond the gym doors. I just loved that.
How much do you love her? Love her.
She's amazing.
She's an amazing writer too. She's been a writer for a very long time. And I don't know if she was also an editor over at Experience Life, but I know she was a writer as well. And that's actually how I first got in touch with her. She contacted me for an interview for Experience Life magazine several years ago. And then I just have been following her and, like, you know, totally girl crushing on her ever since, because she is such a badass. And I think her first quote there, presenting as feminine, like, I think that kind of, that makes me laugh, because I think about how some of us can look really badass and not really be able to follow that up. And then some of us can look, you know, just wear makeup and feel like we're walking into the gym and somebody gives us a weird look because we happen to have makeup on. And then it's like, well, why does that matter? I'm just still going to do this thing. And don't you worry about whether or not I'm wearing makeup, you know? Mm-hmm. Because I know that's something that she's pretty into, you know, having her femininity and being strong, and all of it comes together, and it is who you are or not. If you don't want to wear makeup and you don't want to, like, be into the fashion of fitness, then don't. And if you do, then do. And no one should really get to say whether or not, you know, that defines you as feminine or not.
I think that particular quote may have come out of the beginning of the article, kind of going, I tell women all the time, or whoever actually wrote the article and was mm-hmm. interviewing these women was saying something about how I tell people all the time that lifting won't make you big and bulky. It'll make you, mm-hmm. you know, sexy and strong or whatever. And I think Jen was kind of saying, like what you're saying, whatever lifting makes you, it's amazing. Can you lift yeah. this thing or not? Are you capable or not? And whether or not that fits the bill of what we currently consider as some kind of ideal for women, which I don't even know what it would be at this point, because apparently I think women are dead sexy when maybe they don't fit that conventional, whatever it is. What would it be? Like the figure competitor bill or the Gisele Bündchen bill or whatever it might be. Whatever.
Yeah, I think it depends on the circles
Victoria's
you run
Secret,
in.
Secret, I don't even know anymore.
You know, I run in some circles where, you know, abs and traps and quads and glutes are like the thing. Everybody wants to have muscles and be like lean and fit and strong. And then, you know, there are some folks that I'm sort of friends with or connected to that, you know, if the CrossFit Games is on TV, it's like kind of appalling to them. Like they don't think that that is anything they aspire to, and they think it's crazy. And you know what I mean? So there's just like different strokes for different folks. But I think that part of the next quote that she has about strength being contagious and how it kind of bleeds into every aspect of your life, that's one of the big things that is sort of the mantra within our gym. And I say our gym, and sometimes people think that means that I co-own a gym, and I don't, but just it's our community, it's our gym. But one of the big things that our coaches are always kind of just reminding us about is that we're there in the gym to train for life. Like part of it, yeah, is lifting this thing, but part of it is the mentality and the mindset and the strength of your mind that you bring to focusing on what you're doing in the gym, because you can't be in the gym, especially in a CrossFit gym or any sort of weightlifting or strength training environment, you can't be in there and have a weak mind and make progress in the way you want to make progress. And I think that one of the cool things that happens when people lift weights, whether or not it was their intention, they step into the athlete that every person is designed to be in some way. You know, not everyone is going to be the same type of athlete, but I just think the human body is capable and built to do athletic things, whatever that means, you know, whether that means walking and Zumba or it means weightlifting. I have no stigma around either of those. I think whatever feels good for you and makes you feel strong and confident and able to go out into the world and say, yeah, I just did this thing physically. Now I'm going to do this thing emotionally and psychologically and have that same strength carry through. Like the way that we can feel positive about ourselves by doing something in the gym with our bodies, then I think that definitely carries through to what we do with the rest of our lives, just having that confidence. I just think there's nobody who comes to the gym and hopefully in a good environment, in the right kind of environment for you, whatever that may be, you know, you should leave feeling better and feeling more empowered than when you walked in. And I don't think, you know, if that's not the scenario that you have, then it's probably not the best setup for you. If the, you know, classes you're in leave you feeling emotionally and physically just beat down and not positive and not ready to like take on the world, I don't think that it's giving you the right additional benefit beyond the strength. But I don't know. I mean, I know it's been a while since you've been out of a specific kind of CrossFit gym, but was that something that you think was a big sort of undertone of everything you guys were doing when you were in the gym?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think that's not necessarily what happens when people step into the gym for the first time.
Right.
But your goals have a way of changing when you're introduced
to all the other stuff. For the first time, they're like, what is happening? This is scary and I'm leaving.
Yeah. Or they walk in and they're like, I heard this is going to be really, really hard and maybe it will make me look like that or whatever the ideal is. And then they come in and they get a tribe, they get a community, they get a new set of values that they realize speaks to them a lot more powerfully than whatever it was they were looking for when they walked in the door for the first time, which is a huge strength, I think, of CrossFit and of that kind of movement and of that kind of community that you have at your gym.
Yeah, and I think that's the kind of thing that Jen, she and her husband own a gym called The Movement Minneapolis. I believe that's the name of it, in Minneapolis. So you guys can check them out there if you're looking for a place to train in that area. I think that would be a great place to do it.
Now, this kind of reminds me, and I don't think we had intended to talk about this, but there's been a lot of talk just floating around social media about just the atrocities that go on at the Biggest Loser Ranch. And it's just so in stark contrast to what Jen is talking about and what you were just talking about. There's no empowerment in getting yelled at, getting beat down for 8 hours in an attempt to reach your best self. I would argue that that makes it completely impossible. That is just the wrong road. You're on the wrong road. And no matter how long you're on it, it's still going to continue to be the wrong road. So if you're not seeking empowerment, you're not seeking some kind of happiness that does bleed into every other aspect of your life, if you're just getting your butt kicked constantly by people who make you feel like crap about who you are, man, it's just not going to work. And it makes me sad because I really like Bob Harper.
I could definitely play devil's advocate on that point too. Yeah. Like I agree with what you're saying, but also the people who are there, they're there for a different reason. Not to say that there aren't folks who might walk into a CrossFit gym and have as much of a journey to be on, perhaps as a weight loss journey. You know, I would say it has to be a minimum of 100 pounds that you would really need to lose to be in that situation. But I don't think that that's the vast majority of folks who walk into CrossFit, but I think that I mean, I'm going to go out on a limb and say I know that anybody who's in that situation, it's extremely different from an emotional perspective than
what
somebody
situation?
Who maybe their mindset and their emotional state is very different from somebody who maybe has 10 to 20 or even 40 or 50 pounds that they'd like to lose. And not assuming that everybody who walks into CrossFit has weight to lose. But my point here is I don't think the beatdown is appropriate. So I'm going to just say that. But I think what happens emotionally to somebody when they're in that situation is they are forced to stop playing the victim and take responsibility for whatever choices they've made about their life and their lifestyle and their food.
That's certainly the way they frame it when they put all the different clips together on The Biggest
Loser.
Yeah,
I mean, I know that that's one of the things that has to happen, and I'm totally with you on the approach to it, but neither of us really know what it's like to work with that population in that type of setting. And, you know, of course, the last element there is always going to be entertainment and television, and that's always going to add something. I think we would both agree that's sort of negative because they're trying to sensationalize something that would be better suited to a more private environment where people can handle what's going on with their emotions privately, you know, and get help with that and not have to be berated on TV physically.
I think that's
we just got onto
what
a totally
it comes down to is the television. What you're going to put on the TV.
That dang TV, which is why I really stick to the two main channels of the Food Network and HGTV, because really nothing good happens anywhere else.
That's
maybe
true.
Bravo, but that's just, you know.
Bravo is a hole that you don't want to get sucked into because you will never get out. And you
but
won't
Top
be sad
Chef
about
is amazing.
That. You won't be
Top
sad
Chef
about
is amazing.
Not getting out. Yeah, I mean, I even like Top Chef, and I don't watch it. I mean, I like it, though. But I'm just saying I'm happy in my Bravo hole.
This is a good tangent. I mean, this is a good one.
And I just said Bravo hole, so let's move on.
We'd like to thank Vital Choice for supporting our podcast today, and we encourage you to visit their online store at vitalchoice.com. You'll find an amazing array of some of the world's best seafood, including wild Alaskan salmon, halibut, tuna, and cod, as well as sustainably harvested shellfish. These foods are not only delicious, but vital choices for your health. You'll also find grass-fed organic Wagyu beef, live fermented foods to promote gut health, wild organic blueberries, and dark organic chocolates. Eat better, think better, and feel better with deeply nourishing foods from Vital Choice. They're offering our listeners 15% off any order using code BALANCEDBITES. Remember that orders of $99 or more ship free.
All right, so this week, or I guess it'll probably be last week, in the real food paleo sphere, I wanted to bring up a U.S. News & World Report article talking about the autoimmune paleo diet. Is the autoimmune paleo diet legit? With, of course, a nice little stock photo of someone cutting chicken breast. We have to have the stock photos in there. So one of the quotes in that article was actually from Marion Nessel, who we've actually talked about before, and I believe I used some of her work in my book, Eat the Yolks. And what it's just so funny to me because I want to sit down with Marion and just say, what's bothering you, Marion, about paleo? What is it? Is it because
let's talk about your feelings about paleo.
Because she says in the article, I'd like to see the science behind this. Says Marion Nessel, a professor.
Have you met Terry Walls?
Exactly. A professor in the Department of Nutrition, Food Studies, and Public Health at New York University. A lot of it doesn't make much biological sense, but eating the foods on the okay list should be healthy, so the diet is unlikely to be harmful, other than being a pain to follow. Which is funny to me, because isn't she the one about eating like more fresh, good foods that actually have to be prepared, which is kind of the whole point of transitioning to real food anyways, but a lot of it doesn't make much biological sense. It's funny to me because when you really do go down that rabbit hole of like biological mechanisms behind a lot of the things that we're talking about, specifically in the autoimmune paleo community, it actually makes complete and utter biological sense. So unfortunately, she just kind of outed herself as not being super up on the mechanistic part of all of this.
So it seems like with folks like Marion Nessel and kind of other big wigs in the nutrition community, guys like Michael Pollan, you know, when they have their feet and their roots kind of dug in on whatever it is their take is. They either don't want to backtrack and say something that might, you know, go against something they said in the past, or I think they're just afraid to align themselves with the word and the community of paleo. Like, I think they just have a really strong aversion to that, and they don't want to get, they don't want to be in our camp for some reason, just because it's easier for them to toe the line of moderation or, you know, whole grains and just kind of keep on with it, you know, and not get involved. But it's just, I don't even know. I'm just kind of at a loss for words. It's a little bit, I think, negligent, or I'm not really negligent. Sure how I want to say this, but it's just for her to not acknowledge that there is research on this. Like, I'd like to see the science. Okay, we can show you the science.
Do you really want to see it, Mayor?
I mean, if you'd like to see it, just like Dr. Google can help you, you know, autoimmune diet and or autoimmune condition and paleo diet. And there's research, you know, and that was one of the cool things about interviewing Dr. Walls, because she is one of those people who's out there doing that research. And, you know, people ask about foundations they can donate money to for paleo research. Hers is probably the number one that I would say, like, go ahead and donate money to what she's doing with her research. And I know we're going to talk to Dr. Amy Myers about autoimmunity with her new book, The Autoimmune Solution. I think we're going to talk to her probably in the next couple of weeks here, so you guys can stay tuned for more on that. But yeah, I mean, this last part about the plan being a pain to follow, that part,
I just
enough with that. Because why? Because people want to take a pill and that's easy, so changing what you eat is difficult. Obviously, you've not met enough folks struggling with autoimmunity to find out that changing what they're eating is not as hard as the pain that they're in. And so that part really bugs me, because it also underestimates what people will do when you tell them that this is the solution. Because doctors for so many years... not all doctors, but most doctors for so many years, literally their solutions are always a pill, a cream, a powder, something that is not personal responsibility. It's always been, you go to the doctor, you get a diagnosis and you get a prescription. And so that's easy, you know, and it's easy to be told you have this condition, woe is you, take this pill. It's difficult to change your diet, but assuming that people won't do it or that it's too hard for people to stick to or whatever is just, it's so weak to me that it's just a totally poor argument, and I can't stand it. Like, that really just makes me angry.
I was bummed to see that that was Marion Nestle's quote. I really was.
I used to have a lot of respect for her.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't say I don't, you know, historically, because many years ago, a decade ago, two decades ago, she definitely was at the forefront of, you know, telling people the truth about, like, look, we should be eating real food. That was definitely always her approach, and exposing the truth about the size of fast food, how big, you know, the sodas have gotten compared to what they were in the past, the French fries, all of that. And I think that all that stuff is very important, you know, on a public health basis. It is important when you look at what, you know, fast food restaurants are serving or what's available in food deserts and, you know, these other topics that we don't really talk about as much in our little world, because we're so... it's such a micro, you know, view when we talk about just paleo. But, you know, she has had a lot to say about what we should be eating. And for many years, I was reading her books and really following her work. I've even seen her speak at least once, if not twice. And, you know, no disrespect to the historical work that she's done to uncover a lot of this stuff and to talk about, you know, the marketing that's happened to children and the way that, you know, the food industry is in bed with the big food companies and all of that. Like, she's really exposed a lot of that stuff. But then when it comes to the science, I think she's maybe a little bit behind.
Well, and that's not an unusual thing. She's mm-hmm. a public health expert. And that's mm-hmm. honestly, that's what I was working toward when I was a little more enthusiastic about getting my master's in public health, which isn't completely, that's a little bit on hold right now, let's be honest. But public health experts are steeped in epidemiology, which is great. But as I talk about in Eat the Yolks, there are some problems to the way we look at epidemiology and how we draw conclusions from it. But what public health experts are really able to do is bring the research, generally done by somebody else, to the public in a way that is sustainable and truly makes a difference. which is why I want to do that. And it's not necessarily her forte to be up on the research. So I just don't know. I don't know. It was an interesting choice of person to quote, as these things tend to always do. But I mean, it may not be her place to put the biological mechanisms into, I don't know. And it's just interesting. It's interesting how we kind of choose who we trust on these things. Kind of shut that conversation down with that comment.
For sure.
It is what it is.
I've said all I can about that.
Yeah.
Pete's Paleo is a friend of the Balanced Bites podcast, and they also are fans of the 21-Day Sugar Detox. The 21-Day Sugar Detox is great for your body in so many ways, but consistently feeding yourself right can be a challenge. Pete's Paleo makes delicious, seasonal, ready-to-eat meals that strictly follow the 21 DSD program. They're shipped directly to your door, ready to go. Let Pete's Paleo help you with your 21 DSD success. And don't forget that their bacon is also sugar-free. 5 off 21 DSD is your coupon code for $5 off 21 DSD meals. And 5 off Pete's Paleo is your coupon code for $5 off regular Pete's Paleo meals.
Questions?
Yes.
Cool. This first one is kind of for me, I think, but you'll probably have something to say on it. This is from Sabrina. Hey, ladies, thanks for all you do. Wisdom from you ladies in a paleo lifestyle saved me from Accutane. The skin on my face looks great and is mostly acne-free since going paleo and removing dairy and most nuts. However, I still get severe cystic acne on my back. What's that about? Also, I have large pores and some scarring from years of acne. Sorry, which oil cleansing has really helped, but I'm considering a Clarisonic. Thoughts on the Clarisonic? Okay. Last question here. Any tips of finding a dermatologist in my area who would have holistic, natural approach to skincare? I need someone to help me troubleshoot some non-acne skin problems, but the last dermatologist I saw told me he didn't think removing dairy was really why my acne cleared up. So, a couple things here. Unfortunately, I have no suggestions on finding a holistic or natural dermatologist. A lot of times, like Chinese medicine docs will do some of the natural skincare stuff that you might be looking for. But I don't know whether that's exactly the road Sabrina wants to go down or not. I just don't know. Thoughts on the Clarisonic? Do you have a Clarisonic, Diane?
I thought I got one from... I feel like there's one sitting right here. Hold on. What is this? I don't think it's called that. Is it? Is a Clarisonic one of those little brushy things?
Yeah, it's like a buzzy brush, but it's for your face.
So I have one from my Oprah swag bag that's sitting here. It's made by Olay, though.
Seriously, you got an Oprah swag bag?
Yeah, it had the Mophie in it and, like, you know, all that stuff.
You're so fancy.
It had so much cool stuff. No, it's literally sitting here on my dining room table where I'm sitting recording this podcast, and it's still in the box. That's how good I am about doing skincare things.
Well, you find stuff that works, and you stick with it, and you don't need to keep trying a bunch of other stuff. So my thoughts on the Clarisonic, I am never one to... If a group of people say, wow, it's been amazing for me, I'm obsessed with it, then it clearly works for those people. It addressed whatever need those people had, and, you know, go on with your bad self. But there are also many people who say that the Clarisonic or other machiney things, buzzy brushes like it, cause too much irritation. And there's the problem is not necessarily with the Clarisonic. It's what type of skin the Clarisonic is acting upon, what the problems are.
The terrain
internally.
Is everything.
The terrain is absolutely everything. So if your skin is easily irritated or cystic even, I tend to think it's really not a good idea. I think it can be more irritating than not. And there are just a couple other issues. I don't know. I don't want to just dog on the Clarisonic because I think it does help some people, but I think for people with cystic issues, probably don't want to go there right away. Of course, there are people who will say that I'm completely wrong about that, but that's just been my observation. I just tend to be so easily irritated, less now than in the past, but to a degree, I just like to be as gentle as I possibly can, and I tend to think that's the best approach, along with nutrition and digestive health and all that.
What about the cystic acne on her back? What's that about?
That's what she said. Acne, I would say if she's already seen a ton of progress with the skin on her face, with like a paleo dairy-free diet, she's kind of figured out what works for her. I personally would think that over time, the acne on her back will also improve, given that there's not some kind of issue with extreme sensitivity to like detergent or something like that. It just tends to take a little bit longer to resolve for some people. But there's no, you know, people like to put up that one, that acne map that just gets recirculated from the same website over and over and over again. And I've seen some, there's some validity to it. I don't know if it's accidental or if it's, you know, or what it is exactly, but it just seems to me that that is one of those things that just takes some patience. And if you're improving in other areas, you should improve there eventually as well. There's nothing really magic. It's pretty much the same ideas that I like to give people.
So it's not necessarily, I don't know, really know much about acne on the back.
It's not like, not necessarily hormonal acid, it's your luteal phase. It's not, I just haven't been able to be that pinpointing of it. I just don't see that close of a pattern for people.
The only other thing I would say about it is when I used to have more issues with acne on my back was just from sitting in like sweaty sports bras, just stuff that I would do that I'm like, I should probably take a shower.
Which,
but I don't know that was
a combination of probably irritation, fostering some bacteria that you don't want back there.
Yeah, like the sweat kind of opening your pores up, and then just that combination.
But when people identify something as cystic, I assume that they're talking about something that not just the way it feels and looks, but also the timing of it, which you don't always know. I guess maybe some people kind of think that cystic acne is just like cysts, you know, the big, really painful kind of underground acne. So I don't know. I could be wrong on what she's talking about there, but that's just one of those things that I also think benefits from like a really simple approach. Like you can ice it, but don't pick at it. Don't put a whole lot of stuff on it. Vitamin A in the diet is something I think you should definitely focus on. That just seems to be the first line of defense that we have. It can also modify how our body produces sebum and all that. So that's kind of my best advice there, not knowing a whole lot more about what's going on. But yeah, that's what I think about the Clarisonic and the dermatologist. It might be fun to go to a Chinese medicine practitioner and see what they have to say. All right. This next question I think is for you. Autoimmune shopping list has the very items I avoid. Tell me why. Annie's natural organic salad dressing, for example, love it or leave it.
Oh, I think the salad dressing is an also kind of in addition.
Oh, okay.
Because that's definitely not on any of my shopping list.
I don't love Annie's natural organic salad dressing.
No, I'm going to read you the ingredients from that in just a moment. And okay. I think we'll all be able to make our ruling. But so Paula's asking about the shopping list for autoimmune. I'm presuming she means from Practical Paleo. And just to review some of the recommendations for the autoimmune meal plan in Practical Paleo, I do say under the general diet and lifestyle recommendations, which are kind of an add and avoid, which is sort of on top of the basic paleo approach. It's kind of, you know, also add more of this, also really try and avoid this stuff. So under the avoid, which is I think what she's kind of referring to here, I have some foods that might normally be considered paleo, like nuts and seeds, eggs, nightshades. And then I mention foods that are high in insoluble fiber, like leafy greens or raspberries and strawberries. So raspberries and strawberries having a ton of those little seeds. And if you read the nutrition facts on any of those berries, or if you were to look at, like, I used to eat the dried raspberries Trader Joe's sells. I don't know if they still sell them, but years ago I used to get them. I was like, wow, these have a ton of fiber, and it's just all the seeds that essentially just pass through you. So that's that insoluble fiber from those seeds. But when she's asking about, you know, why those would be on the meal plan at all, it's not that you shouldn't ever eat them. It's just that modulating how much of them you eat is important depending on your digestive state. So somebody who's dealing with autoimmune flares is probably also dealing with some impaired digestion. They almost can't ever go they can't really ever go in isolation. They're going to work together. So if your digestion is really strong, you're probably not going to be having an autoimmune flare. And this is just stuff that even if you're not sure what you're feeling with your digestion, just kind of paying attention to the types of foods that you're eating can really help. So it's not that you shouldn't ever eat leafy greens. You shouldn't. I don't even have broccoli or cauliflower or green beans on this list of what you should avoid additionally. So I'm not sure where she got that. But if that's something that she was told elsewhere, I would just say to avoid those in a raw state. I would say they should always be cooked or very well cooked. And what that does is it just helps to break down some of that fiber. It starts to break down some of the cellulose in the plant and makes it easier to digest. And it makes some of the nutrients easier to access. Although the one thing that food will lose mostly when it's cooked is vitamin C. So that's one that people do need to be aware of getting in other ways from some raw foods, or citrus juice is a really good place for that. We can get tons of vitamin C from bell peppers if you are doing bell peppers on autoimmune, which some people are not doing the same autoimmune as everyone else, just kind of depending on the things that you've tested. So that's that. And that's, I mean, it's pretty much the basics. It's not, you know, when it comes to autoimmune, if she's avoiding broccoli and cauliflower because she has a thyroid condition, so she's trying to avoid goitrogenic foods, again, it comes back to cooking them, which is going to reduce the goitrogenic properties in those vegetables in the cruciferous family. So that's going to be an okay approach for her. And lastly, looking at the Annie's Naturals Organic Salad Dressing, she was asking about the French variety. The ingredients, I don't know why it said other ingredients, water, expeller pressed vegetable oil, and then in parentheses, canola and or sunflower, and then apple cider vinegar, tomato paste, cane sugar, et cetera. It kind of goes on. Really, the biggest issue here is the oil. Just inherently, number one, the oil that they're using in this. I wouldn't recommend this salad dressing. It's something that you're going to be eating these types of oils when you dine out all the time. This is what every restaurant is using. So I would just say, if you like this type of dressing, I would try and find a recipe for it online, and I'm sure that you can. And I would try and use either an olive oil or even an avocado oil, something that's a cold pressed oil that's not a refined seed oil as the canola or even sunflower oil would be.
I just realized that I read the question heading and not the actual question. So way to break it down.
Oh,
sorry. All right. Next one. Moving out of the sun of Florida to Boston, Rebecca says, thank you for all that you do. I love listening to your podcast. I've lived in Florida my whole life, or as Diane would say, Florida. Say it, Diane.
Florida.
Florida. Growing up in hot and humid South Florida and going to college in Central North Florida. However, I've recently graduated from college and am moving to Baston after getting an amazing job offer. I'm terrified of the cold and possible lack of sunlight I'll be getting up north. Do you have any suggestions on how to adjust to living in the cold and how to mitigate any negative effects? Thank you so much.
When did she send this one? Can we be like, don't go.
She may be going at a time of year that's, I mean, maybe she's not going this winter. But I liked this question. I know we've talked about tanning beds and which ones to use and all of that type of thing if you really want to get some of that naturally occurring vitamin D. But I think it's important that folks contextualize their seasonal feelings with vitamin D in mind, which is why I like this question so much. So I think at this point, being that we're recording this January, February, it's like, it's right in the hot middle of the really difficult time for a lot of people. And a lot of locations that have a high prevalence of like seasonal affective disorder and whatnot also happen to have high prevalence of vitamin D deficiency. So one of the things that could mean is that during the winter, when there's less vitamin D, we just are going to have more issues. But what that could also mean is that people are not propping up their vitamin D levels as effectively in the summer, when they could have some good natural sun exposure, like I talk about in Eat the Oaks, and that can take them through a more difficult winter. Now, if you're moving from Florida to Boston, that could be interesting because Rebecca is probably used to getting a lot more sun and a lot more vitamin D than she will get once she's been there for like a full seasonal cycle. So I don't know. I think that supplementing with really a good source of vitamin D3, I like the stuff from Thorne, but I would recommend not getting it through Amazon. I would recommend trying to find a practitioner that can order it for you. The vitamin D3 drops are good. I mean, for some people, vitamin D supplementation seems to be good. For others, not so much. I like to recommend really vitamin D-rich foods like sardines, and get some egg yolks and get some good seafood, which shouldn't be a problem in Boston. But those are my recommendations. But also just make sure, Rebecca, that you recognize when it gets tough that that could be what's going on, and not so much that you hate your job and your life and the city and all of that stuff. Just contextualize it properly, and that might make it a little bit easier to tackle.
Side note here on the seasonal affective disorder, our friend Bill Staley actually posted about this. I want to say maybe it was on Instagram or Facebook. I don't know where, but he mentioned that while doing a really low sugar sort of candida detox cleanse with Haley, because she's been doing a cleanse as directed by her naturopath, I believe. He's been kind of just supporting her and doing along with her, and his seasonal mood issues have really not been the same. Like, he's actually felt a ton better by reducing it. And he's got like a sugar monster. I mean, he can handle it. Like, he doesn't, you know, have body fat issues, or generally doesn't have any issues with his mood or anything like that. But, you know, he'll eat paleo treats, and it's no big deal for his body typically. I mean, Scott's the same way, and I don't bake as much even for testing or anything like that as Haley does. But, you know, he can usually have a few cookies, no big deal. But doing that challenge, I think, was tough. And I don't think he expected to have that response. But they've also been doing some like infrared sauna detox and all kinds of cool stuff. So I don't know. I just thought that was interesting.
Boston's fun. Boston. My friend Quinn lives in Boston, and she's, I mean, there, you can have fun in the sun in Florida, but you can have fun at the bar in Boston. Google Jimmy Fallon, Rachel Dratch, SNL skit. They're pretty funny.
Oh, yeah.
You are.
You no, you are.
No, you are. Now, all day. All day.
All day.
All right. So we're at about 45 minutes right now. Should we jump into our tips and all that other good stuff?
Yes, indeed.
Yes, indeed-io. All right. So I know I've been asking you your kitchen tip questions, but what is your kitchen tip for this week for us good and bad cooks alike?
All right. So this week I figured I would give you guys three shortcutting / time saving products that I love and that I use in my kitchen. I know whenever I post pictures on Instagram, which I do all the time, so if you don't follow me there, head over there. But I post pictures all the time just kind of holding some random product that I like, and people just seem to really enjoy seeing that. So the first one, which I have posted about quite a few times, is a brand called Good Boy Organics. They have a line of tomato sauces that's called Yellow Barn. And they're not only organic, but they're also biodynamic, which I consider this tomato sauce to be made from like unicorn tears, because it tastes probably better than anything I could make from fresh. I think they probably have some of the best sourced produce that you can get. I don't even ever see organic and biodynamic produce in the Whole Foods that's here by me or farmers markets here. If you can even find organic produce, that's kind of the best of it. So, and you know, I'm in northeastern New Jersey. So if you have all that stuff near you, cool, make it yourself. I do not. And I love these tomato sauces. They do not pay us to say that. But they're great. All of them are great. And I tend to buy them when they're on sale at Whole Foods, because they're pretty expensive when they're not on sale. I want to say they're $8 a jar, not on sale, but you can get them $2 off. So for me, for $6, that's kind of like the crux of my meal. You know, it's like the sauce is bringing it all together. I know you're a big fan of, you know, pre-made tomato sauce, like really good, clean ones. And this is my favorite brand right now. Love it. Super mild. I don't even think they use oregano in it, which I have grown to love oregano. But for many years, I had a really just kind of ick response to it. It just tasted like not good pizza to me, which I, you know, pizza can be really good, but I really used to be turned off by just dried spices in a tomato sauce, and they're just everything they use is super fresh. So I love it. Check that out. And the second one is pre-sliced, pre-cooked frozen eggplant.
Hold on. And pre-sliced, pre-cooked, frozen. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So they slice it and cook it, and then they freeze it. So it's actually, you just have to thaw it or heat it up. Eggplant. So anybody who's trying to make like a paleo eggplant parm, or this morning I just threw eggplant down underneath like some scrambled eggs and just, I don't know, just mix it in with anything. And also they sell artichokes this way, just frozen artichoke heart quarters. And they're just frozen in a bag from Whole Foods again. That's where I tend to do most of my shopping. And you'll see the ingredients list only eggplant or only artichokes. So the company that's slicing it and pre-grilling it, they're not even brushing it with oil or putting salt and pepper on it. It's just totally plain and it's awesome. So I love those. Really great for shortcuts. And I love the artichokes because most of the artichoke hearts you might find in a jar or a can have either citric acid or some other kind of preservative. And I just love that these are frozen with nothing on them. I think Trader Joe's had been selling a similar one for a while, and now they do have something added. So just kind of keep your eyes open for that. And the very last one that I use that's kind of a shortcut, and I kind of joke to Scott all the time that I'm like, we are lazy and this is costing us more money than it should. But we've been buying the organic par cooked rice. And did I talk about that previously?
You talked about the word par before. It kind of blew my mind.
It might have been the rice. So I'm just going to throw it out there really quickly because I think I talked about it last time we were on the phone Last time we were on the phone. Which is never. We never talk on the phone. It's either a text or a podcast.
Yeah.
But yeah, the pre-cooked rice. So just shouting those out because I love them. And I know that all of you guys want to know ways to make cooking faster and easier. And I cook when I'm home, I cook almost every single meal I'm eating at home. And those are some shortcuts that I take. So hopefully you enjoy them.
That's lovely. But I just have to say my sadness right now is like most of my digestive system has been displaced by my uterus. And I can't fit all the food in my body. It makes me so sad. Because I like to eat a good volume of food in one sitting. Like I'm so over the days when it was like 6 small meals a day, and I have 12 Tupperware containers.
Who has time for that?
I know, but I'm having to make time. It makes me so sad. It's the worst. I guess it'll all be worth it in the end. So they tell me. All right.
All right, Liz, do you have a fertility tip for us this week?
Yes, this is kind of a little teaser summary type thing because obviously this is a tip and not a, you know, something longer than a tip, which what would that be?
I can't.
An acrylic? I don't know. All right, so my fertility tip, if you're trying to get pregnant, don't rely alone on ovulator predictor kits if you can help it. If you can, take your daily waking basal body temperature. There are a lot of resources out there that can help you do this. We're going to collect them a little bit more and talk about this in baby making and beyond. But doing this can help clue us into our cycles, which is kind of really where it begins and ends, and possible phase length issues much better than OPKs alone. So next week, I'm going to give a little tip on how to boost your basal body temperature if you're waking with a temperature at like 97 or below, as I did for a very long time, which can have some association with cycle issues and infertility and all that good stuff. So it's just a good practice to get into if you're trying to learn a little bit more about your body and how it works and all that stuff. You can do the two together, the OPKs and the basal body temperature taking, but I would not do just OPKs alone if you're looking to collect more information in less time. Did your eyes glaze over, Diane?
I was like, whatever you're saying, I will do the opposite.
Do the opposite. Do none of that.
No, all right. I'm going to throw this in. I think that knowing about your fertility is just as important either way, because if you're trying to approach family planning in the opposite way, where you're not wanting to have kids, I think it's just as important to pay attention to your cycles. And, you know, we've talked about birth control and natural birth control and all that stuff in the past. And I think that's one of the huge factors is just paying attention to your cycle and what's happening there and knowing where you're at.
Very much so. I think a couple of years ago, I think it was actually a listener that alerted me to some of the taking charge of your fertility stuff, because before that I had kind of just said copper IUD, like non-hormonal birth control, and you're good. And now of course people know that I'm
less enthusiastic about that, and I'm much more enthusiastic about, like, what you just said, kind of knowing your cycles and then use a condom. Any chance I have to say that word, I'll do it. All right, so that's it for this week then. Find Diane at DianeSanFilippo.com and join me at RealFoodLiz.com and join our email lists for free goodies you don't find anywhere else on our websites. While you're on the internet, please leave us an iTunes review. See you next week.
Let me clear my throat.